Blogging the Boys presents Cowboys Radio with Rabs and McCool. Here are your hosts, Rabble Rouser and Landon McCool.
Hello, howdy, and welcome to another edition of Blogging the Boys Cowboys Radio. I'm Landon McCool, and with me as always is Rabble Rouser. Rabble, here we are, three preseason games down, one more to go, and the season is only, what is it, like a week and a half away?
It's about a week and a half away.
That's crazy, man. I mean, all the waiting we've been doing, and it's finally well on its way. And this is kind of the really fun, interesting time for people like you and me that love team building. Because this is kind of where the nitty gritty gets. We get to find out exactly who's going to be, at least on the team for week one, who's going to be on this roster.
Yeah, you know, it doesn't seem like it was that long ago when, you know, our kind of like countdown to the kickoff mm-hmm. counters were at 248 games, or rather 248 days.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and I was thinking it'll never get here.
Yeah.
And then suddenly here we are. We're about 10 days away.
And now you're barely back from camp and barely had time to rest before you're just getting right back into podcasting about more football, my friend.
Well, this is true. I did have about a week of slightly downtime, which is good, but I'm actually feeling pretty rested and ready. I'm ready for the season. I'm gonna hit the season with guns a-blazing.
Well, it was kind of an eventful week as well, so we should get into some of that news. But before we do, let me go ahead and plug Blogging the Boys. It is your one-stop shop for all Cowboys news. Make sure you're going there in the preseason, in the regular season for all your information. Check out bloggingtheboys.com. Make sure you're following them on Facebook, Blogging the Boys, and follow them on Twitter, at Blogging the Boys. But like I said, we do want to go ahead, and I mean, since we missed a week, there was some news. We should catch up with that. So why don't you go ahead and give us your thoughts on the rather unfortunate news of the Orlando Scandrick ACL tear?
Yeah, it's a the thing that kills is it was the last practice and it was the last period in the last practice. Mm. And the last one at Oxnard anyway. And so, you know, here we were probably five plays away from escaping Oxnard without any significant injury to any major player. Yes, Ken Boatwright hurt his neck pretty badly earlier in camp, but it's debatable at this point whether he would have even made the roster. And Scandrick is probably the best slot corner in the league, as the team's best cornerback, and certainly in 2013, a strong argument could be made he was their best defensive player, and he was one of their very best last year. Mm-hmm. I think we had him rated, remind me here, help me out.
11, if I'm not mistaken. No, 11 was Beasley, because I remember that word. Down. Yeah. But I think he was 12, and I do remember him being ranked like the fourth or fifth, I think, best defensive player.
Yeah, so, but he's still, you know, he's still one of the top handful guys on the team. And I think there's two things about this. The first is I don't think that they're going to necessarily – well, it's not that they're not going to miss his on-field contributions, because they certainly are. But this couldn't have happened in a better year in
that,
a way.
That's the best way to phrase that, absolutely.
You know, in the sense that they have the deepest cadre of talented corners that I can ever remember this team having. This team has had Hall of Famers at every position. And they've had Hall of Famers play cornerback, obviously Deion Sanders and Mel Renfro and those kind of guys. Cornell Green was a Hall of Fame caliber kind of guy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there have been times when, you know, Aaron Mitchell was a starting corner during really, really good defensive years. Mm-hmm. Larry Brown was a starting corner during really, really good defensive years. So they've – and oftentimes behind those guys, they've had almost nothing. So – the fact that they had six viable NFL corners this year is a real rarity for this team and this roster. And so there's really – I mean, first of all, there's few positions at which this kind of injury would be more welcome. Obviously, you never welcome this kind of injury. But at corner, at least they have the depth to recover and make up for this. And in Tyler Patman, they actually have a kind of young Orlando Scandrick, a sort of young – scrappy guy with a chip on his shoulder who has a similar kind of game. I'm not saying he's going to be as good as Scandrick, because that, you know, he has to prove that, but he's got a lot of Scandrick qualities. Now, the place where I think they're going to miss Scandrick the most is in the huddle and probably on the practice field, because the thing about that is he's a chippy, sort of grumpy, bitter dude.
Tenacious.
Tenacious is a much more positive term for it. who just... you know, despite all the successes, and despite the fact that he's worked his way to the top, is a kind of supremely unsatisfied guy. And he and his attitude, his demeanor, as Garrett likes to put it, was infectious last year when there was a kind of leadership void after DeMarcus Ware left the team. And I think that they'll miss that a little bit because there was something just chippy and gritty and tough and hardworking about the way he made his way onto the field every day that is going to be more difficult to replace. And frankly, it's something that we didn't see a lot during camp because he wasn't there much.
Yeah, and actually, you know, he wasn't having – even before this, he wasn't having the best camp in general, even before he left with the left knee injury that he had. He was kind of struggling a little bit, and, you know, it's hard to tell just because, you know, we don't really see them in the weight room or training and anything. It's hard to tell if it was a matter of him just – maybe not being in the best of shape coming into camp with, you know, being out of the off-season conditioning, or if it was a matter of him just, you know, kind of being knocking the rust off. But, you know, there's absolutely no doubt that this team is going to miss him in some capacity. The question is really, you know, how much. And to me, like, I tried to quantify it in my mind, and really what I think it comes down to is that instead of getting – the steady player that, you know, he's not getting interceptions. He's just not good at that. He's not good at catching the ball. But he's really good at covering his man. I think he was one of the only few cornerbacks last year that, you know, played almost all the starting snaps without allowing a touchdown last season.
That's
and,
right.
And I don't just mean for this team. I think I meant league wide. So, you know, that's where even it's funny because he's, you know, tenacious is definitely the word, a scrappy. You know, those guys usually to me are kind of you think of other guys who kind of fit that description, and Courtland Finnegan. I mean, not modern Courtland Finnegan because he's not worth anything, but Courtland Finnegan in his prime was kind of like that. And when you think about those kind of guys, they usually are kind of feast or famine types, right? Like Janoris Jenkins is kind of another one of those guys where like they're, you know, they're scrappy and they like to fight and they get in your face. But they usually are big boom or bust guys, right? Well, Skandrick wasn't really that. Skandrick was the guy who was kind of steady Eddie. Like, he, you know, he was always very good and matched up well against some really good slot receivers and was kind of very consistent, which was great for this defense. And I think what we'll see out of Patman is maybe not that steady level because, I mean, he's basically – I mean, he's not a rookie because he played some games last year, but he didn't get a lot of experience last year, so he's not experienced. But what we have seen from him as opposed to Skandrick is that he can get his hands on balls. He's good at catching the ball, so maybe he might provide a couple more interceptions, but at the same side, you know, maybe allows a few more touchdowns. So it'll kind of be interesting to see how that plays out. But because of just how fantastic his training camp was, I'm you know, part of me is hesitantly excited to see what he can do.
Right, and I think the one last point before we move on is that you know, some of the news out today is that the team, Stephen Jones in particular, expects more Mo Claiborne to be picked on because of his recent history. And if they pick on Claiborne, they're not going to be going after Patman. So that'll help Patman in the early going, at least. The other piece of news that I think we really need to spend some time chatting about is the third preseason game, the annual dress rehearsal. This year, it happened to be against the Vikings. So what were some of the impressions and takeaways that you had from watching that game, in which we, you know, got a chance to watch the starters, quote unquote, for significantly longer than any point we had this entire preseason?
You know, real quick, we should talk about, like, just kind of our process of digesting preseason games. And you know, obviously the third preseason games, at least for this team and for most teams around the league, is the one that has the most, I guess I would term it, useful information, useful data, right? Mm-hmm. Or just because you're going to see the most of the ones facing potential other ones, or at least key, you know, contributors going against each other. But at the same time, you know, I think it's dangerous to read too much into, you know, entire unit struggles or entire team struggles, because, you know, there's not a ton of game planning going on. And ultimately, what's happening is it's more about trying to get the coaches to reveal things in their own players as opposed to exposing the other team, right? So
correct.
So what I always do is try to look at, I look at matchups. You know, I try to go with known quantities from the other teams and see how they match up against our players to see, you know, exactly what we're getting. And those are the kind of exercises you do in a preseason game as opposed to like just, you know, looking at the whole score and seeing how one team beat the other team. You know, it's not useful to do that. So, you know, keeping that in mind, you know, a couple things stuck out to me from the Vikings game. One is that the defensive line looks really good. And I know I just said not to, you know, kind of, you know, wholly make estimations on whole units. But the reason I feel a little bit confident on that is because individually, the guys that you need to do well for that defensive line to look good all did well. And then when their backups came in, even when we were having subbing going on against the Vikings ones, they were able to get pushed. They were able to provide some pressure, and that looked good. And I think that combined with what we've seen kind of throughout the preseason is this defensive line might be as good as advertised. And I think that's a little bit scary to say out loud because you don't want to be that confident about it. But that, you know, the Vikings performance combined with what we've actually seen in practice the last week where the defense has really started to pick it up as opposed to the first few weeks against this, you know, what we know of, speaking of known qualities, we know this offensive line is good. Our offensive line is good. So we've seen the defensive line start to pick it up in the last few weeks of practice against our own offensive line, which to me is a good sign. It's not a sign of the offensive line being bad. It's a sign of the defensive line. You know, Greg Hardy's rust finally getting knocked off. The light seems to really be turning on for Randy Gregory in a way that a lot of us hadn't anticipated. And Mincy, specifically in the Vikings game, looked great. I think there was one run where he beat his man to the backfield and stopped the sweep, and it was great to see him just getting some run stops. So I thought the defensive line looked good. Speaking of, or at least all the individuals on the defensive line, I thought Mo Claiborne, for his first action in a long time, looked really good. He had that one defensive holding penalty across the field, which, you know, that's going to happen sometimes when in coverage. You're going to get beat and you're trying to make a play. But there were several other times when he was in good position down the field. He was physical. He was not afraid to take on a tackle in the alley, which is really what you're concerned about with a guy who's, you know, kind of been up and down, been brittle at times. He stuck his nose in there and didn't mind taking a pulling tackle on to try to stop a run from getting to the outside. I thought that was good. And then the other guy that on the defense, I kind of wanted to point out just because, you know, we haven't seen him either, is Sean Lee. Sean Lee looked like Sean Lee to me, which was the first time in a while that he had, just maybe because he hadn't gotten a lot of, you know, snaps with pads on. But he's still Sean Lee. You know, he still sees the ball great, and as soon as he sees the ball, he pulls the trigger. And that's what you want from your Will linebacker. And then one more thing, and then I'll let you kind of make some comments about the offense if you want. Is I thought Gachkar was a real surprise at middle linebacker. I think he looked pretty good there, I thought. And I was actually surprised a little bit because I didn't know that he actually was a Mike or if he had played Mike, but he looked instinctual. He was physical at the point of attack. I saw at least one short yardage play where he was the one who stuffed the ball in the hole. And he saw exactly kind of almost Lee-like where he saw it, he pulled the trigger, he got the tackle. And if, you know, this has been kind of my issue in general with what's going to happen the first 4 weeks without Rolando McClain is I think Hitchens is a great run and hit linebacker. Where I have issues with him is he physical enough in this particular defense without us having some kind of, you know, slobber knocker one technique, even with Hayden in there, was Hitchens physical enough to do what he needs to do at Mike? And I've been concerned. Gachkar looks like he could be a guy who, at least for 4 weeks, could give up his body to the football gods until Rolando McClain and the cavalry come in.
I agree completely, and I think the Cowboys coaching staff might even have been a little bit surprised by how physical Gachkar was. It seems to me that one of the conundrums that faces them is, okay, do we put this sort of old veteran in Jasper Brinkley in there? Do you remember the 95 team? Mm-hmm. They had been decimated by free agent losses, and they lost. Remember those early 90s teams had so much depth, so much young athletic depth along the linebacker core. But by 95, they had lost a bunch of those guys. And they actually had, I think, a former Packer, Rod Strickland, I think mm-hmm. his name was, playing middle linebacker. Number 55. And he was, the kind of poster child for a two-down linebacker.
Yeah.
And, he did okay. It was a very athletic defense, and it was okay to have a kind of masher in the middle who, was pretty good between the guards, basically, and he could make plays between the tackles. But that NFC Championship game at the end of the 95 season, which I think probably actually happened in January 96 against the Packers just destroyed Rod Strickland because they kept finding ways to force him to match up against one of their tight ends. They had Keith Jackson, they had another tight end whose name I can't remember right now. And they kept hitting plays to linebackers down the seams because he wasn't as athletic enough. And so, the question is, how long can you get by with a guy like that? And Jasper Brinkley is basically this year's version of Rod Strickland. How long can you get by with a guy like that? And so the other option is to go with a guy like what they thought Gachkar was, or who they think Hitchens is, who's a great run and hit guy, a good pursuit guy, a guy who, if he's unimpeded to the quarterback, to the ball carrier, will take a good angle, make a good play, but isn't going to give you that kind of physical stack and shed quality inside. It's not going to take on guards inside and stymie them. And lo and behold, Gachkar actually did some of that. And he's not a big dude. He was what? He's 230, 235, maybe. Yeah, he's not a real big physical guy, but he had good technique, and there were several times where he stood guards up straight up. And I think that was a kind of revelation to a lot of people.
I think he has longer arms. I think that's what I think he has length because that's the one thing that a couple different times when I was watching, I didn't know who it's one of those things where, when you watch these guys so much, you don't have to see their numbers anymore. You know their body like types and you kind of see the way they move. You can tell who it is. I didn't recognize him at first just because I'm not as familiar with him because he's new to the team. And there were definitely a couple of different times like, whoa, who's that? And it was mm-hmm. Gachkar. And I think that's the thing is that now that I'm starting to notice him on defense more, he looks like he's built halfway between Hitchens and Wilbur to me, where he's kind of got that long arms, but he's not long legged like Wilbur is, And I think it just seems like he's got a better physical makeup to kind of, if he needs to stack and shed, can do it a little bit better because he can, extend his arms. Maybe he's not mm-hmm. bigger and stronger to destroy incoming guards and tackles like we've seen McClain do before. But he can maybe at least get the job done. And again, you're right. Like, I think that's an apt comparison because I can't picture Gachkar being physically able to do this 16 weeks in a row. Like, but that's the good news is we're not asking him to do that. Nope. We're asking him, hey, buddy, please help us survive these first four weeks. We got help on the way after that, Exactly. And I think that's. This is going to be interesting with this latest revelation, too, because it's going to be interesting to see how the rest of the linebacking core shakes up. I think this could spell doom for the guy you just talked about that just moved
over
from the
Vikings.
Jasper Brinkley, yes. I forgot his name last week, too, which is ridiculous because how do you forget a name like Jasper Brinkley? But anyways.
Because he has such a forgettable game.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. So I do think that this could be bad news for Jasper Brinkley. And I actually heard today that, they did the blue-white debut practice today. Gachkar, with McClain coming off the pup, Gachkar was actually starting at Sam.
Yep.
So I think that they may think that he could be one of their three best linebackers on defense, which is, where did that come from? it's so funny, it's like he wasn't even really in the running. I think he was definitely going to make the team because he clearly is a special teams ace. And obviously not only Bisacci and
Matt Eberflus,
both
coached him at Missouri.
So I think that they clearly liked him, which is why he was definitely going to be on the team. But quite a little fly up the depth chart there at the last few weeks. Anything in particular on the offense that you generally wanted to point out?
Well, I actually have two points I want to make on the defense.
Oh, go ahead. Continue. Yes.
Sorry. The first is that I've been saying for a while now that the two off-season deals that I think we're going to look back on in January and think, wow, the Cowboys front office really did fine work here, are the Ander Gatchkar and Corey White signings. Both yes. of those were like under the radar signings, and almost everybody went, eh, who are these guys? Never heard of them. So what? They're just cast offs from some other team. They're not gonna have much of a role. They might be special teams guys. And both of them actually, you know, they're good players, and they have a lot of game to them. And I think they're both, you know, knock on wood, as long as they stay healthy, are gonna make some important contributions. And the other guy along the defensive line that I think deserves some mention is Ryan Russell.
Yes, yes. Another guy who's kind of flown up the depth chart late.
Boy, has he. And I think he's flown up the depth chart to the point right now where he's, I mean, I don't know if I'd label him a roster lock, but I would be shocked.
I would be too.
If he was not on the 53. Shocked.
Yes.
And you know what? This actually reminds me of what might very well have been my favorite moment from training camp. So the last day of camp, at least the last day I was there, I decided to go over and stand right next to the defensive line drills because, you know, that's one of my favorite things at camp anyway. So when they're, you know, they're working their way through the bags. And every time Ryan Russell would take a rep, I heard this voice say, "Come on, Russ!" And I was like, who the heck is saying that? Who's Russ? And there's like, and then finally it dawned on me, oh, it's Russ, it's Ryan Russell. And so I was like, who's saying this? It was a kind of high-pitched voice. I'm looking, I couldn't find. So I'm moving around a little bit. Every time he takes a rep, I'm moving like two or three people over, trying to figure it out. And finally I see this woman. She's small. She's about 5'3", maybe. Fairly small woman, and she got a big voice, and she was like, "Come on, Russ!" And so I look at her, and I walk over, and I go, "See, do you know him?" And she looks at him, and she looks up at me like I'm the stupidest guy she's ever seen, and she goes, "I'm his mother." And so I go, "Oh, awesome!" I said, "Well, how come you're here? How come you're not on the field?" You know, so we joked a little bit, and then I said to her, "I don't know." I said, "You probably know this, but he's had probably the most improvement over camp of anybody on this team." And she looked at me with some sense of suspicion, but also like with mother's happiness in her eyes. And she just said, "No, I didn't know that. Thank you." So it was kind of an awesome little exchange because, you know, after about the first week of camp, where he struggled, let's be honest, he struggled quite
yes,
a bit the first
he
week.
Did. He did.
But boy, at some point the light went on and he's been, you know, going up the depth chart with a bullet. And I, you know, he's passed up Ben Gardner. He's passed up LeVar Edwards. And I think that he's, you know, he's not only, you know, looks good now, but I think the team expects him to be a significant contributor as a kind of rotation role player guy up and down the line over the next few years. In terms of offense, you know, the proviso that you offered at the beginning, I think is really important here when we think about the offense, because, you know, what they did was really boom or bust. So basically, they didn't move the ball well at all, largely because of penalties. As Garrett said in his post-game presser, you know, the first couple, three drives, they got holding penalties that put them in difficult situations, which made it hard for them to run and establish the run, and it put them behind the eight ball. And, you know, Romo is not going to stand in there, you know, and to take a hit to try to get a completion on 3rd and 18 in a preseason game.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
No.
So, they did nothing, and then suddenly they had a big play to Terrence Williams, and then they had a really nice punt return by Cole Beasley, which gave them, what, like a 20, 25-yard field, and they drove down and got a touchdown. I don't know how good the offense is. You know, I mean, they looked good. They looked explosive, but they also looked really out of sync.
I mean, we haven't even seen the whole offense yet.
No,
I mean,
and this is the most important thing. So, you know, we talked earlier about where you and I had ranked Skandrick in our 1-90 list, right? So who was number 2 on our list?
Dez Bryant.
Who was number 3 on our list?
Zach Martin.
Were either of them playing?
No, they were not.
They were not. So, you know, I mean, when you take 2 of your 3 best players on the team out of a unit, the unit's not going to be as good.
And especially when one of those guys' replacement was the culprit on a lot of the negative plays on those first 2 drives. Mackenzie Bernadeau really struggled.
Yeah, he really did.
So, yeah, and listen. And then the other guy is the most game-planned for player maybe in the league. You know, so, you know, it makes a difference when the, you know, one guy isn't out there when that one guy is Dez Bryant or when that one guy is Zach Martin. And when you have both of them, it makes a real big difference. So, yeah, I think that's the kind of thing that you are trying to avoid mass, you know, judgments on. Now, what you can take away is, how do you feel like the sides, the offensive line was working together, which didn't look great at first. But again, I think part of that is, you know, Bernardo was definitely a weak link. I think Frederick kind of struggled a little bit, didn't have a great game. But I think, you know, overall, the offensive line, you know, caught on a little bit. I think there's some groups out there, and I'm looking at some of these Team McFadden guys who are claiming victory after that game, and I'm with a stink eye a little bit because, you know, it's so clear that the team got going after Randall was kind of subbed in for McFadden and started run blocking a lot better. And McFadden was running through huge open lanes through, you know, instead of a full first team defense, you know, versus a maybe a, you know, a half first team, half second team, maybe some third teamers in there. So, you know, it's an imperfect comparison to try to compare Randall and McFadden based on the Vikings game. So,
I think the other thing that's important to remember is that the Vikings basically were like, okay, we know you like to run the ball. We know that one of the things you want to try to do today is to establish the run and be committed to the run and all that. So we're just going to go ahead and put a bunch of guys in the box and see what you can do. And the Cowboys said, okay, fine. As long as we're not going to hold, we're going to throw the ball to Terrence Williams. He's going to score a long touchdown. So if you want to keep doing that, we're going to hit you deep. And so they backed off a little bit. So not only did they sub guys in, but I think they weren't stacking the box quite to the same degree.
No, I agree. Yeah.
Which brings up this Dez Bryant issue.
Well, yeah.
Because if Dez Bryant's in there, they're not stacking the box.
Yeah,
no one's stacking the box. So yeah. I think that, you know, but the combination of a really good offensive line and the deep threat. If I'm a defensive coordinator, I'm wearing like three or four pairs of Depends the week I play the Cowboys, because you've got to stop not only Dez Bryant, but as several people wrote today, we're recording on Monday, as several people wrote in their Monday columns, Terrence Williams has established himself as one of the NFL's premier deep threats.
Yeah.
And so how do you, you know, it's a pick your poison thing. Mm-hmm. You want to play back? Fine. We're going to run the ball down your throat and we're going to kill you with Cole Beasley, and Jason Witten's going to find all kinds of room underneath. And if you want to try to stop them, we're just going to go over the top. And so I think when all the pieces are there and they have the option to basically play pick your poison, they're going to be dangerous. The problem is, of course, we haven't seen that yet.
No.
Because, you know, because Dez hasn't been in there, and he's one of the key pieces.
Yeah. I honestly, it was interesting. I have a little thought experiment, and then we'll move on to the last bit of news. But, you know, I was thinking about how, you know, they talk about how the, you know, the team gets better, during those middle kind of weeks of training camp. That's where the team starts improving the most. I think these last two weeks, specifically this last week before they play the Giants, this is where the team actually coheres a little bit. Is that the word? No. They come together.
Cohere. Yeah.
Where they start to really kind of come together a lot more, because now it's okay. Now we're game planning for our week one opponent, where none of the starters are playing in the week four game. So it's just about us focusing on getting our part of the team ready for week one. We'll let the rest of these guys get their reps so they can fight it out in the fourth preseason game. But this is supposed to be the time when the starters are actually getting together. They know their jobs are secure. They get together and start to actually form their individual units and form the cohesiveness there. And I think this is right when that sort of stuff will all start to come together a little bit more. So you saw Zach Martin was out of practice today.
Correct.
You know, Dez Bryant was out there again today. They're going to start to get these guys who have the nicks and, you know, bruises start practicing again, because now it's important to start getting ready for the New York Giants in week one. Okay, so before we finish, well, let's do this last bit of news. So there's two more bits. We went so long on dress rehearsal, we forgot to talk about one bit of news that isn't Cowboy specific but does have some Cowboy ties, is the Julio Jones contract that was just signed that kind of, you know, relates back to our conversations about the Dez. Maybe you can explain a little bit further.
Well, you know, during the whole Dez Bryant contract saga, you know, people kept saying that one of the reasons that the contract hadn't been signed yet is because, the team couldn't trust Dez. They thought that Dez was a bad guy. There was this, the questions of this, ridiculous video. There are all kind of, people kept bringing up the Dez rules. All this stuff kept being part of the conversation. And I would like to say the more level-headed among us, we're saying no. In fact, that's not the case. The problem really has to do with the fact that the market for wide receivers has not been set. There's a sort of yawning gulf between the guys who have established the top of the market several years ago under an old system and some other guys who have signed reasonable contracts in the new system but aren't as good as these elite franchise wide receivers who are getting ready to have their contracts be negotiated. And so one of the reasons why it seemed like Dez and Demaryius Thomas took so long, as we were saying, was because the market hadn't been set. And on these two teams had to set the market. And once the market was set, a lot of other elite receivers, Julio Jones, A.J. Green, et cetera, are going to have their contracts settled pretty quickly thereafter. And sure enough, here we go. A year before his contract is actually up, Julio Jones gets his. I would be surprised if AJ Green doesn't, get his done pretty quickly as well. Mm-hmm. And so to me, it just reinforces what we were saying about the fact that this has nothing to do with the Dez rules or anything like that. I think Dez has grown. He's a very mature guy. The Rolling Stone article really shows just how together his life is. And it had everything to do with the fact that the market hadn't been set. And there was just, the people were just sort of floating in space in terms of there was no kind of monetary point onto which they could get a toehold. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I'll tell you what, let's move on to our next item, which is the cut down to 75. This is sort of a weird arbitrary thing that the NFL set up, and we you and I have talked before, just when you and I have been chatting, about the sort of paradoxical nature of this, because it's at this moment when teams are preparing for the fourth preseason game, that's the game when none of them want to play any of their starters or meaningful role players. And it's precisely when they need all those down roster guys to take snaps that the NFL asks them to cut 15 of them from their roster. So any sort of thoughts or about the people who were cut from when the Cowboys went from 90 to 75?
Well, no. I mean, that's the thing is that the thing about it is that, first of all, you're absolutely right. And I think the problem is that it's a holdover since before, the league kind of universally established that the third preseason game was the one that their starters are going to play in.
Yes.
And that the fourth preseason game would be kind of like the tryout game. And I think if, they had to do it all over again, they would just eliminate the cut to 75 and make it a cut from 90 to 53. I think I still haven't been explained why they don't do that. I think it's probably just to kind of win the news cycle for the week, but
right.
It just doesn't make any sense to cut them before a game when you're going to be playing exclusively these types of players. One of the reasons that you and I decided, just to peel back the curtain a little bit, one of the reasons you and I decided not to necessarily comment about it is because, first of all, we wanted to wait until all the information was in to give you the good information, which includes the cut down to 53. And also, even the cut to 53 is deceiving. It's the talent acquisition is a 365-day year job, and that doesn't change just because we're in the middle of cuts. I mean, there's been lots of instances where, quote unquote, this team's has gotten down to 53, and then the very next day there's two roster moves. I think there's not going to be any surprises, at least for the Cowboys getting down to 75. I'm sure they'll cut their extra punter and their extra long snapper and, all the guys who they've basically had in practice to, basically get them through practice. I'm sure the guys who they've added the last 2 weeks will go, it's just not a surprising lot. It's mostly guys who almost no one has heard of except for people that are watching the waiver wires like you and I do, basically.
I heard a story from one of the reporters at a camp in which another reporter who has actually befriended several of the players had a player walk up and say, you know, complaining about the various ailments he had and stuff. And he said, I don't know why I do this. I know I'm going to get cut when they cut down to 75. So this guy didn't have any illusions about, you know, that he was going to make the team or anything. And he understood that he was there just to basically take reps and sacrifice his body for a decent but not substantial chunk of change.
Yeah, and I think that's the reality of a professional football player. I mean, I think there really are, and I think they've tried to do this with undrafted and some of these other, but there is such a great story to tell about, you know, that level of football player. You know, I mean, we all know about the Dez Bryants and the Tony Romos and the Jason Wittens, but like those guys who are street free agents who are kind of in and out of the league over and over again, like it's so fascinating to me, like the kind of things that these guys have to go through, right? Like to do exactly that, to go in and know that you're just going to be beating yourself up and really there's just very little chance that you're going to make a squad. It's just such interesting psychology to me. I think To get back to the point, it's not going to be surprising who they go down to 75. There won't be any names. There may be some names on some other teams that might be surprising, but that's only because we don't know what's going on in those camps, right?
Correct.
I mean, that's you may hear a name of a guy, you're like, oh my God, that guy's a Pro Bowler. Okay, well, yeah, he was a Pro Bowler in 2006. So, I mean, there's a reason, and he's making $7 million. So that's why he got cut, and no, we're not making a waiver claim on him. So, you know, it's that kind of thing that you're going to see with the cut to 75. It'll be more interesting when they cut to 53, obviously, and we'll have lots of commentary on that because it will be controversial. And later on in the show, we'll be kind of doing our own little, you know, handicapping of those last five or six roster spots that are kind of up for grabs. But other than that, you know, even like I said, even that is not the end of the day for this. It continues on beyond that, and guys will get cut and grabbed, and the roster, you know, isn't set until we get the official 45, hours before we get to play the New York Football Giants on September 7th, I think. So.
Yeah, in fact, you know, what you're talking about, to my mind, you know, now that we're sort of looking forward a little bit to what's going to happen at the end of this week, I actually think this end of this week before the first week of the season, the official week of the season, is probably the busiest 3 or 4 days in the NFL calendar other than the 3 or 4 days of the draft and that sort of free agent or, you know, undrafted free agent scramble that happens immediately after the draft and maybe the opening of free agency. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of roster movement, a lot of people making a lot of phone calls, a lot of people in front offices staying up late and grinding on the phones, et cetera, talking to agents. And so it can be a pretty exciting time. And so, you know, all during the preseason training camp, et cetera, you know, you and I and myriad other people have been engaging in these 53-man exercises. But the bold truth is we should probably be doing like a 47 or 49-man exercise because almost every team, you know, establishes a very soft 53, but there's usually 2, 3, 5 guys who end up, you know, joining the 53 at the very last minute from some other team as they try to balance things out.
And it's no surprise that it's no secret rather that the Cowboys will be looking at the waiver wire for guys being cut from, you know, the Seattles of the world that run similar schemes that have quality talent on their roster to see what they cut. I mean, that we very well could pick up a running back here and then cut one of our guys, or you know, the safety that shows up somewhere, maybe a swing tackle that we like as a development guy or something. You know, I think all those are chances that could happen. I mean, so again, the 53 is definitely not the end of roster acquisition. But yeah, in the process of getting down to 53, that's what makes this part time of year, like you said, maybe the busiest all season long. So
I mean, one of the things that's going to kick off that 3 or 4 day scramble is the final preseason game. So do you have anything, thoughts about that preseason game? Are there anything particular you're looking for? And I guess, in some ways, one of the questions might be, as we, you know, preview this, so to speak, how many roster spots are still up for grabs?
Well, I know that Houston's going to be excited for this game. Just because, you know, this is their Super Bowl every year.
Trying to get that Governor's
Cup. Yeah, so super important Governor's Cup. You know, I think I don't really know how many roster spots are up. I mean, if we're talking about roster spots that are going to be decided by this game, I don't know that there's very many. You know, like I think there's some guys who need to put in good performances in this game to solidify themselves on our roster. You know, I think the ones that come to mind are, I think you're going to see Lucky Whitehead get a chance to return all the kicks in this game, and that could be big for his stock. I don't think it was great. It was good for him that he scored a touchdown on that play that he kind of continued on his route and got open for Tony while he was scrambling around. That's good to see. But it was also not good for Cole Beasley to have a couple good returns and look decent back there returning the ball. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what comes of him in that whole situation. I think there's a couple of, you know, guys who, you know, probably will play in the game that maybe some people thought were roster locks, but they need to have a good game in order to kind of solidify themselves. And the guy that kind of, you know, really comes to mind, that got multiple guys that come to my mind are people like, you know, Ben Gardner really started turning it on, but like you talked about, Ryan Russell has come on, so is Gardner going to push for that spot? You know, Davin Coleman's probably going to play. Is Coleman continue his hot streak? And if so, I think he's pretty much a roster lock. You know, Bishop's another guy who probably needs to play really well to kind of secure his spot. This is a name that I don't know that – I think some other people have brought it up, but is Danny McRae a lock to be on this team?
No, I don't think so at all.
I mean, I haven't seen enough out of him special teams-wise to make me think so, and I never have seen anything from him safety-wise to think that he's a lock. So it'll be interesting to see how the defensive backfield shakes up. I think that's the most – interesting part of the post Skandrick injury defensive backfield is just how they plan on arranging their defensive backfield roster. So, I think Jameel Showers is going to be a guy I'm going to watch. And let me go ahead and say this, since I bring up Showers, I don't want to see any more Dustin Vaughn. I'm done with seeing Dustin Vaughn, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, we don't need that guy on the team anymore. Like, he basically ruined the whole second half of that third preseason game.
He single-handedly rendered
it unwatchable. I mean, it was terrible. Like, I mean, the guy can't even throw the check down anymore. Like, it's like watching a human devolve. It's kind of sad. And the one thing too, I will say this, as I'm a Showers fan, Showers didn't do much either to incite confidence either. So, I mean, it's not like he, you know, is taking his spot. I mean, I still think that I'd rather have Showers than Vaughn just because of special teams ability, but I'd rather have neither than have either. So that's just my opinion.
Yeah, so run down a couple of positions, because I think there are sort of questions at several positions. But before we do, I'd like to, if you don't mind, I would love to share something that Bob Sturm wrote on Monday about – it was in an article that contained basically – a whole set of observations from camp.
We love to listen to the gospel of Bob, so please read upon us, brother.
let me open the book to
open your gospel to page
to Bob 5, verse 7. So he writes, and this is something you and I talked about way back at the very first, probably beginning of camp, first podcast, etc. But this is important, interesting to think about in terms of this particular roster. And he writes, "The oddest part of this entire camp is that it sure seems like 40 to 50 of the 53 spots were pretty clear all the way back before the first bag was packed for California. Now, that sometimes just means this is a good team that has plenty of returning pieces from a contender. So I'm not sure it is anything to get worked up about. That said, as we try to build drama to cutdown days, there just hasn't seemed to be a whole lot of pressure from below the cut line during this camp. I imagine you would prefer several players from that bottom group trying to force you to keep them. But as we look at the long shots at wide receiver, running back, offensive line, or really anywhere on offense, I'm pretty sure the exact 24 offensive players we thought would be on the 53 will be. Every one of them that we would have picked on July 1st will be on the offense. And then he puts in parentheses, perhaps with the exception of whether they would keep a fourth tight end instead of a third quarterback. Finish parentheses. And then he continues, I don't ever remember that much stability in any of my 18 training camps, but it sure has kept the excitement level of cuts to a dull roar. Usually somebody rises up, but aside from Gus Johnson, who has that been? Most of us thought Lucky Whitehead was on the team back in May because of his return ability. The drama is not high right now. And then later on in the article, the little couple lines he writes, the Cowboys are a good team and good teams have quiet camps, save for the occasional fight. And with the exception of the horrendous Scandrick story, this month has been properly under the radar nationally. So I think that, you know, we talked about the 75, and I think the better part of the cut down to 53 is going to go along these lines. There just aren't that many surprises. And I think one of the reasons is because this roster really is sort of, there's haves and have-nots, and those haves are very clear and the have-nots are very clear. There's not a lot of people in that middle space. And there have been other years where there are like 10 to 12 guys who are in that middle space, and we might be down to like 5 or 6. And as a result, there's no surprises among the 15 who are cut from 90 to 75 because we knew none of those guys had any chance of making the roster. And I think there will actually be precious few surprises for the cut down to 53. They have about 55 NFL players on the team, maybe 57 now. They've had a couple of injuries and that kind of thing. So there are a couple ways to think about this. One of them is that we can be disappointed in the down roster guys who didn't put upward pressure, as Sturm writes about. But the other is that this team is really strong, solidly built. The guys who we thought were going to be good turned out to be good.
And the big key here, and this is the thing that I thought of immediately when I read that same article too. It's fantastic. The thing that that popped in my head when I first read it is that all those things are true that you mentioned, Rabble, and they're young.
Yeah.
That's the key, is that when you have a young, talented, returning team, there's not as much upward pressure because the rookies don't have the younger kids don't have the youth advantage over the vets, right? When Zach Martin is your best offensive line, Zach Martin and Tyron Smith are your best offensive linemen, and they're not even 26 years old yet. Like, there's no way for there to be upward pressure. Who in the heck is going to come out here and push out a 25-year-old all-pro? No one.
Because the thing about that is, oftentimes what you have, you know, if we think back to 2006,
exactly,
2005 and 6, when Romo was getting better every year by leaps and bounds, and it became, you know, increasingly clear that he was playing better than Drew Bledsoe.
Mm-hmm.
These guys, like the guys you mentioned, Zach Martin and Tyron Smith, they're young. They're getting better. They're getting better every year. They're still improving. Yeah. So, you know, some young guy, you know, so what are we going to do? Ronald Patrick is improving by leaps and bounds, but Zach Martin's improving even faster.
So is Travis Frederick. And so is Ron Leary. Exactly. And we're mentioning offensive linemen, but that's all throughout the team, really. You know, it's funny because even at the defensive backfield, I mean, you talk about like, Mo Claiborne was an afterthought, you know, but it's tough with Mo Claiborne comes back and suddenly he's the Mo Claiborne we expected. It's tough for bottom people to catch up to that because he has, you know, NFL experience, is still kind of young and is playing decent, you know, and I think there's lots of instances like that where, you know, it's tough for a young Hitchens to push the up roster because Sean Lee showed back up. Mm-hmm. And so he's still Sean Lee and he's playing great, you know? And I think that's the problem is that there is a lot of really good young talent. And I think it was ESPN Insiders, like scouts.com. They ranked the top teams with talent under the age of 26, and the Cowboys were the number one team. And it shows because, I mean, and I think that's what kind of describes and dictates that not only what Bob is describing in that post, but the lack of drama when we talk about cutting down to 53 is that, like we said, yes, talented, but you know, there is competition here. But the problem is it's hard to beat talented, young, and improving. You know, those are three things that if you've got all three, That's hard to unseat those guys.
Absolutely right. So I'll tell you what. So let's with that in mind, let's focus on those few little spots that in fact might be real roster questions for when they cut down to 53. Let's start with the offense, and I think if we can go position by position and just talk about some of the kind of questions that might be facing the coaching staff. So let's start with the quarterbacks. Obviously, I mean, it seems obvious to me anyway, unless somebody incredible is released, surprisingly, the top two guys are set in Romo and Whedon. The question for me is, have either of the other guys shown enough for the coaches to keep more than two quarterbacks?
No. The reason I can say that just unequivocally, kind of without hesitation, is that there's too much talent in other parts of the roster. I'm not sacrificing, you know, the 53rd best player on this team for the 70th player on this team, which is what is at very best what you're going to get with your third quarterback. Maybe in another year I would, but not with the level of talent, not with the guys that we're going to be putting out on the street this year.
And I think that, you know, the logical response here is, if Romo goes down, it doesn't matter who your third quarterback is. The season's over.
Yeah, or it doesn't. That guy probably isn't going to be your backup anyways. I mean, even last year, Dustin Vaughn, when Romo got hurt and Whedon was starting, the Cowboys were out looking for a backup quarterback. They weren't going to let Vaughn be the backup.
No.
So, but I mean, it just worked out that Vaughn was. But I mean, yeah, like this, you know, you're right. If Romo's gone for an extended part of the season, you know, who cares who the third quarterback is?
It doesn't matter. Yeah. And it doesn't matter that you don't have one, because the guy you pick up off the street is going to be just as good in terms of your overall team success. Okay. Yeah. Running backs. We know that they like the main three. It seems unlikely that any of the other running backs in camp will stick. The question really now becomes, are they going to look outside the team for either a fourth running back or to replace one of those three?
I think that they were, you know, I think that they will look at obvious things, and I think that they may even trade if they think that it's if they have a reasonable trade on the table. But I think the real key is they had to take the training camp to just find out what they had. You know, I think they, you know, they don't want to just base their evaluation of what Randall is based on last season. I think they wanted to see what an offseason would do and what he would do with just the idea of him being the lead back. And I think that they needed to see at least a little bit of Randall running behind this offensive – I mean, McFadden running behind this offensive line in order to get an idea of what he's at. Because really, to me, if we get a fourth guy, I almost feel like it may come at the expense of McFadden. I don't know that that's for certain, but if they decide to go out a guy who they think is going to improve the team as far as, like, you know, an upgrade to the position, not just I guess that's really the question. If they add a fourth guy, is it the fourth guy, or are they actually looking to improve the top of that depth chart? If they're actually looking to improve the top of that depth chart, you know, I think it's pretty easy to kind of discard McFadden at $200,000, you know, guaranteed. I think that's, you can swallow that without, you know, losing too much sleep. And I think, you know, that's where they'll go. But I think that's really the question, is what is the quality that they see? Is there a guy that's available for trade that they think could be better than their top one or two guys? Or is this a guy who is a young guy that they think is better than Gus Johnson, that, you know, may or may not make the 45?
Right. I think they try to get that guy in the practice squad. The problem for me is that the biggest negative from training camp and then the preseason more generally is that they never got enough evaluation time for these backs.
Yeah.
You know, all three of them were dinged at some point. There was very rarely any time when all three were competing at the same time so that they could get some kind of level, you know, judgment, you know, running the same plays with the same offensive line, you know, et cetera. And it seems to me that the biggest question going into camp remains the biggest question, and I'm not sure that they really got that much more information and that would help them solve it than they had to start with. And so to me, this makes any kind of judgment about whether they're going to go outside really difficult, because do they really know what they have? Did they ever have a chance to give the ball to Randall eight straight times and see if he could handle it? Did they ever, you know, like these kinds of things? It seems to me that you'd want to try to check off these boxes if at all possible during a preseason and a training camp. And I'm not sure that, you know, I'm not sure how many boxes, if any, got checked.
Well, that's why I think that if they get a guy, it'll probably be more. It'll be a player that's not similar. It'll be a bigger back that is, like, that they at very least know, okay, hey, this guy can at least take survive a punishment. You know, the punishment of the NFL. Like, you know, the kind of guys who I'm looking at now are, you know, not so much the, you know, people have talked about Lamar Miller and traded for that. I don't know if that's even reasonable. But I think, you know, someone like Monty Ball or someone like, I can't really think of another guy just off the top of my head. Maybe Niles Davis, you know, I don't know, like someone who's just someone who can handle the abuse, but is a little bit different than the guys that they have. Because, you know, it could very well be that they just add another body to throw at the problem, you know, like add another fourth type of running back to, and then just, okay, let's see what we got. You know, let's just take them all out for a drive and see what we got. And it may be that every week is different. You know, every week it's who playing the hot hand. Who knows?
Oh, yeah, I think that's definitely going to be what they do.
Well, I think, you know, they want to try to name a quote-unquote starter, but I think at the same time they are still pretty committed to running back by committee. So it'll be interesting to see who's available and what the names are. But I do think, you know, look out for a Rawls, a Thomas Rawls. Mm-hmm, look out for a Monty Ball for in a trade. Look out for Niles Davis. Look out for these guys who, have some experience in a zone system, have some size to them, can pass block. Like, those are the guys that, you know, maybe are kind of a different piece than what you already have on the team. And at the very least, can complete the team, if not take over a majority of the carries.
I agree. Okay, so let's move on to the wide receivers. It seems like the top four guys are set in stone. It doesn't seem like they have the space on the roster or even the talent in the receiver core to keep six. So it seems like they're going to keep five. And so it appears that this is coming down to a battle between Whitehead and an outside receiver from another team, perhaps one who can replace either Dez or Terrence Williams should one of those guys go down. So they need not a slot guy, but a big, tall, physical outside guy.
I'm gonna blow your mind here. I'm gonna go with only four wide receivers.
Wow.
And I'll tell you why. Because I'm gonna have four running backs and four tight ends. And I've got a running back and a tight end who can each play wide receiver.
So wait. You've got four running backs and a fullback?
Yes.
Or including, oh, so you think they will pick up that fourth back.
And four tight ends. Yes, and four tight ends.
Dude, my mind is blown.
Because here's the thing. Escobar can do wide receiver stuff. In fact, that's almost kind of what he does at this point. Mm-hmm. And Dunbar can do a lot of wide receiver things. But if
God forbid, Dez goes down, who's going to be your number two?
Well, who's going to be number two wide receiver just lining up in formation?
You need two outside guys who can win on the outside.
I think Beasley can do it, and I think you can rotate guys in there. Look, it's not going to be Whitehead or, you know, whoever else you pick up off the street. Those guys aren't going to be any better answer as your number two wide receiver than having Escobar run those routes or having Street run those routes.
Well, but what if they can find a LaRon Robinson type?
Well, then you do that in the middle of the season. You know, then if Dez is out for an extended period of time, it's like Romo. It's like, well, we'll do the best that we can, but it's nothing's Dez. But I mean, the point is that even with someone like Dez, like, You replace Dez with four or five different guys, not with one guy. You know, like, I mean, it's like you replace Dez's end zone, his red zone production with Escobar. You replace his, you know, middle of the field stuff with Williams, I guess, and then, you know, his short yardage stuff with somebody else. I mean, it's you know, it's when a wide receiver goes down, there's going to have to be personnel adjustments, I think, in season. But my point is, why bring a less than fifth receiver? I mean, if there's another guy, I do like the idea that you're presenting that it could be another guy off another team. That's a possibility. But as it stands right now, I don't see that you need to walk into a game with five wide receivers.
I got you.
So I guess that's my point, is that when you have two wide receiver type players at running back and tight end, I think it affords you the ability to go into the season with four wide receivers.
I got you. So the next position that I think have some questions you may actually have already answered. It's just tied in. So, you know, the question is, are they going to keep Swaim and Hannah, Swaim or Hannah? And you seem to think that they're going to go with four. Can you, you want to explain that further?
Well, I think that either what will happen is that they'll keep four or they'll trade one of those four. Maybe they'll trade Hannah for a pick just because he's in his last year. He's a cheap guy. He's good. I mean, you know, I think he's got a lot of good tape, blocking and receiving. Maybe not as much receiving, but he's, you know, when he can catch the ball, he can move.
Oh, if you dangle him, there have to be teams out there who would be very happy to buy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a dearth of blocking tight ends in the league. I think he can do both, which is helpful.
One of the precisely the reason why they decided to spend a sixth to go up and get Swaim is because Garrett was saying that with the collegiate offenses,
you don't see those guys
deploying
anymore.
The way that they do nowadays. There are no more blocking tight ends.
Yeah, so when you find them, you better go get them.
Damn, well, better go get one.
Yeah, so I think they'll keep four, but I also wouldn't be surprised just with Hannah's contract status that they end up trading him to a team that needs him.
It seems to me that if they're going to trade him, it's going to have to be for an asset that's worth losing what they won't get from him this year. Because
I think it would probably be like it would either be a nice pick trade, a nice pick that we get surprised over, or I think it's a sweetener for getting that running back we want.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's just my thought. So we should move over to the other side, and we'll go ahead and flip this, and I'll ask you. So let's start with defensive ends. You know, we kind of briefly discussed this. I mean, the good news about this position is that there's lots of good talent to choose from. The bad news is there's too much. We got to cut some of it. So Edwards, Gardner, who's that guy that we're gonna the day after the cut down to 53, you're gonna be like, suck and went through your teeth because you hate to see that good defensive end lose, but unfortunately he had to go.
I think we're going to say goodbye to Ben Gardner.
Yeah.
I just don't think that, you know, for as sparky as he is as an athlete, and we talked about this before, I just don't think that he has the kind of burst or the long arms that allow him to win. It's so funny because in many, you know, by several measurables, he's a better athlete, quote unquote, than Randy Gregory. But Randy Gregory has the two things that Ben Gardner doesn't. He's the anti-Ben Gardner in some ways. He's got those long arms and he's got, you know, great first step.
Mm-hmm.
And Gardner just doesn't have those things. He's a battler. He works hard, but I don't think he can do it. And I think Edwards has been coming on a little bit. I think he's built more like the kind of defensive end they like. He's a little longer. I think if they're going to keep this would make six defensive ends. If they keep a sixth defensive end, it will be Edwards. Now, they might, because, of course, Greg Hardy's going to be gone the first 4 weeks, what they might do is keep Edwards for weeks one through four and then try to stash him.
Yes.
So it wouldn't surprise me to see that happen at all. But in terms of, you know, once Hardy's here, I don't know if Edwards is around because I'm not sure they need him. But I think Gardner's the odd man out. You know, it just became increasingly clear that he just didn't have that same kind of athletic burst, you know, that someone like Russell was beginning to demonstrate camp wore on.
All the down roster defensive ends basically are going to have to learn to play defensive tackle too. And that's what it seems like, is that all these kind of further down guys are going to need to be versatile. And if you're not elite pass rusher, then you're going to need to be versatile. And unfortunately for Edwards and Gardner, they're not that versatile. So,
no, and I mean, and you know, talk about a guy who showed versatility. We're back to our friend Ryan Russell.
Yes, exactly.
Who's actually flashed both
at both positions.
Nice combination of power as a strong side end, and some speed as a strong side end. And then once he moves inside, guards can't handle it.
I think actually I don't know if you noticed this like I did, but I noticed that it took the move inside for the light to turn on for his play on the outside. Did you see that? I mean, because that was kind of interesting how they moved him inside, and then I thought, oh, maybe he'll stick a defensive tackle. And then when they moved him back out, I was kind of surprised until he started flashing there too. So I guess, you know, that's the good news is that, yeah, Russell's really kind of started to come on, which is great. Maybe he'll just keep that arrow up, and, you know, he may earn himself some serious playing time. So, all right, let's move on to defensive tackles. This is kind of another spot. I'm going to, you know, ask you this question. If you had to choose, and I don't know that we do, but if you had to choose right now, Terrell McClain, Davin Coleman.
Well, you know, it's funny because I thought all of camp that Terrell McClain was in. He flashed big time during the beginning of camp. He's a veteran. They like him, et cetera. And, you know, we knew that they were skeptical about Devin Coleman because he was kind of a screw up and he was immature and stuff. But the last few days, I'm hearing a lot of stories, particularly from Brian Broaddus, who talks to the scouts all the time, that it may be Terrell McClain's job is in jeopardy and that the person who could take that is Devin Coleman because they're very similar players.
Well, I don't know how it couldn't be. I love Terrell McClain as much as anybody. I think I really like Terrell McClain, especially since what we saw early on. But, I mean, Devin Coleman has been on an absolute tear.
Yeah.
I mean, has there been any defensive lineman outside of Randy Gregory who's flashed more than Devin Coleman the last three games?
So.
No.
No, I mean, and the combination of power and quickness that he has – when he plays relentlessly, he's really, really a force. So I guess the question is, if we have an either or here, I think it's pretty clear, right? You go with the younger guy. He's got more upside. He's been flashing. He's younger and cheaper. But it's interesting that the question has become either or as opposed to both. And it felt like a couple of weeks ago the question was both, that McClain was in, and Jack Crawford was in as the backup at three tech. They were the third and fourth tackles. And then the question was, how many can you keep? Can you keep a Devon Coleman? And that still may be the question, but it's interesting if they're only going to keep four, that Coleman might just be that fourth guy.
Well, I do have to say that the part of me really hates that Hayden, who has no versatility and isn't like this great nose tackle or anything, is just walking on this team. But I mean, again, as I've said every single time I bring up his name, come take his job. Come take his job. Anybody want to take his job? Anybody got his job yet? Because no one's done it. And and obviously, you know, he keeps winning that job and he keeps locking it down. So, you know, I do wish that we got more pass rush out of him at times, even though he got a sack the other day. I hate to see that kind of lack of versatility went out. But, I mean, again, no one's moved him yet. So,
and speaking of no one moving him, you know, double teams have a hard time moving him, and that's one of the keys. I mean,
He's not beating the double teams, but they're not beating him either.
No, so what Nick Hayden does is he guarantees that Tyrone Crawford will succeed. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, do you want that, or do you want a guy who you know, some teams think, well, maybe our center could go and help out the guard with the three tech.
Yeah. I just wish, you know? I wish Coleman could hurry up and be that guy.
I know.
Where
that
I could do both.
Maybe
yeah.
in a year or two.
So, and I thought Terrell McClain could be that guy this season, but he hasn't been healthy enough to show us that. No. And unfortunately, that might mean that he's not on this team next year. So, all right, linebackers. I guess the big question at this point is really the only real question is Jasper Brinkley on this team or not?
Well, we talked about this earlier when we were singing Gatchkar's praises. And I think that, you know, if you look at the behavior of the coaches and who they're playing where, I mean, Brinkley's running
like third team.
Third team.
Yeah. I mean, that's not good.
So that's not good. And I think he started on, you know, running first team at middle linebacker with Rolando McClain out. So the fact that, you know, he's doing the opposite of Ryan Russell, who's, you know, going up the roster with a bullet, it seems like that he's sinking like the stone. So that's never a good sign, especially for an aging veteran. So I wouldn't be surprised at all. I mean, in fact, I'd be willing to put some money that he won't make the roster. I think that if they can possibly find a younger, more dynamic kind of player, that they'll try to replace him, because I am not sure that they feel like they can get enough out of him.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they found like a younger, athletic two down thumper kind that they thought that could be like a, you know, maybe a Gatch, what they, you know, like what we were hoping to get out of Gatchkar, you know, what we're just talking about, like that kind of interim, you know, middle linebacker that can stack and shed. Maybe they'll sign him, but otherwise, yeah. I mean, Brinkley doesn't cost him a lot. It's not that big of a hit to let him loose. We'd rather have the roster spot, and he never really did anything, which is just unfortunate because he played pretty decently last year from Minnesota. So, all right, and finally, safety. You know, I think it's pretty far-fetched to believe that we're going to get like a true free safety guy cut from a roster or on our waiver claim. So mostly probably what we'll see coming out of camps are a lot of box safeties getting cut. Keeping that in mind, do you think that there's a chance they get an outside safety help? Maybe they trade. They could possibly trade. And also, kind of going back to the other question, what are your thoughts on Danny McCray?
I agree with you about safety. I think that, you know, the chances of them getting a safety who's better than anybody they have are very slim, especially given the fact that both Corey White and Byron Jones are playing safety. And actually, Byron Jones played free safety with the ones today when J.J. Wilcox was out he had a little bit of a sore neck. Are they going to find a young, promising safety better than Byron Jones?
No,
that's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. No team in the league would ever let that kind of player go.
Yeah.
The Seahawks, with the best free safety in the league, would not let that kind of player go.
No.
So I think that's a sort of moot question. You're right. So the question now really becomes, is McCray giving them enough on special teams for them to have him just kind of sitting around the roster, given that I think we all can agree he's not going to give them much on defense. In a sense, he replaces the safety they picked up from San Francisco last year, whose name?
Spillman.
Yeah, Spillman. Thank you. Spillman, you know, he played a few snaps as a defensive back, but for the most part, he was a gunner and a damn fine gunner. And I think that McCray, to make the roster, would have to be that guy. And I haven't seen it.
I haven't even noticed him in special teams. You used to notice him.
You used to all the time. Yeah. He was always in the middle of things. Remember when he and Church both made the team, as you say, very similar kinds of players. And Barry Church got better and better and built up his game. And McCray, for a while there, became a very dynamic special teamer. And some people were even saying he was a Pro Bowl caliber special teamer. But he seemed to fade before they ever sent him to Chicago last year, and I'm not sure he's got much left in the tank. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him go and for them to do something like pick up another Spillman, some other sort of safety who's shown some shown a little pop or flash on special teams, because that's what they really need.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that could very well be a pickup for them for sure. All right, any other positions we didn't list? You have any surprise special teamers that are going to get cut?
No.
LP Lattiser going to get beat out finally? No.
I mean, the cut down to 75 basically allayed any of those possibilities, because they got rid of Hornsey and Kreider. Those are the first two guys released. So
we're going to have
the same specialists for the third or fourth year in a row now.
Well, so it was good to chat Cowboys football again. What do we have for the agenda on our next podcast?
I'm glad you asked. Believe it or not, as we were intimating at the very beginning of the show, our next podcast will be our season kickoff extravaganza. So this is who we're planning on having, and we're crossing our fingers we can make this work. We're going to have Mike Fisher and David Moore on to discuss the Cowboys offseason, to assess the roster, to preview the upcoming season. And speaking of previews, we're also going to chat with a member of Big Blue View, which is our SB Nation Giants sister site, about the Giants' tumultuous offseason and what to expect from them on during week one. So it should be a pretty good show. I'm really looking forward to it. Some good conversations. We're going to wrap everything up and put a nice bow on the offseason, and look forward to playing with live ammo.
Yeah, and I can't wait. It's so close, we can taste it. But before we go again, we need to make sure we're plugging Blogging the Boys, speaking of SB Nation. And make sure you're checking out Blogging the Boys for all your preseason stuff, like we talked about, getting ready for week one, interviews, information, everything you need to know Cowboys-wise, you'll get at Blogging the Boys. Make sure you check out their Facebook page, Blogging the Boys, and their Twitter, at Blogging the Boys. And until next week, guys, go Cowboys, and happy trails.
Happy trails, y'all.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds when we're together? to